Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Radio Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, the network for social justice. Today we open with updates on the Los Angeles fires from Public News Service, along with some national news stories on President-elect Donald Trump's latest nominees and legislation that could impact immigrants. Locally, SDG&E has restored power after shutoffs to thousands due to fire danger, but the utility warns that more shutoffs are possible as additional high winds are forecast. We'll have a special report today on controversy in the Grossmont Healthcare District after a new member, who's a working mom, asked the board to switch to evening meetings, but the board declined to do so despite testimony from dozens of district residents, healthcare workers, union leaders, and elected officials. El Cajon's police department has released video of a fatal shooting by police officers of a motorist who rammed a police sergeant in front of police headquarters, then tried to run over him again. Our report includes audio from that tragic incident. We'll also have news about arrests just made in the murder of a Lemon Grove man last year. From California News Service, hear about potential cuts in mental health services that could impact wildfire victims. San Diego's Cardinal McElroy has been appointed by Pope Francis to serve as Archbishop in Washington, D.C., where he is already speaking out against Trump's plans for mass deportation of immigrants. The county's Law Enforcement Review Board is seeking nominees. Learn how to apply for this oversight board on our show today. State budget cuts to higher education could mean larger class sizes at University of California and Cal State campuses, and we'll have details. Then in sports, Santee hosted an international race walk with competitors from around the world, including some who broke all previous records. La Mesa has sworn in its most diverse city council ever, with a majority of women, several women of color, and the city's first LGBTQ+ council member. The County of San Diego has issued a health warning after hantavirus was found in a wild mouse in Rancho Cuyamaca State Park. We'll also have details on new state laws aimed at helping consumers. President Joe Biden has signed into law a bill to expand and protect tribal lands for the Jamul Indian Village. Plus, hear about Syrian immigrants in El Cajon celebrating the liberation of their homeland and the fall of the Assad regime. And finally, on Destination East County, we'll tell you about all the most fun festivals and events coming up across our inland region. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters.
Welcome to 2025 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I know that you continue to face these fires as they are still working to bring them under control. And unfortunately, this will probably be a life-changing event for so many of you.
FEMA Administrator Deanne Criswell tells California officials high wind forecasts mean there's no end in sight for the LA area wildfires that have burned thousands of homes. The largest fire is about a seventh contained. In spite of life-saving efforts, at least 16 people have died, with a similar number missing and an estimated $50 billion in damage. President Joe Biden has approved funding for FEMA to remove debris and support local and state emergency activities. California Governor Gavin Newsom suspended environmental rules to make it easier to rebuild, but on social media, President-elect Donald Trump falsely blamed Newsom-backed environmental regulations for restricting water to the affected areas. Tech billionaire Elon Musk has reposted related conspiracy theories about Los Angeles Mayor Karen Bass, although experts on California weather and water say climate change is much more to blame. Meanwhile, Newsom's latest budget could cut services for the mental health impacts of the fires, zeroing out groups like the California Parent and Youth Helpline, which provides emotional support at evacuation centers. Dr. Lisa Pion-Berlin with Parents Anonymous says the budget might need to be changed because with whole neighborhoods wiped out, the need is greater than ever.
Because they no longer have their community. They don't have their school. They don't have the safe place they lived in. They're displaced, and the impact is devastating.
Attention in Congress is shifting to the nominees for Trump's administration. Critics are raising objections to his choice of Project 2025 co-author Russ Vogt to lead the crucial Office of Management and Budget. When he served in that role during the first Trump administration, Vogt delayed hurricane aid to citizens. And David Kiva with EDF Action says Vogt supports the controversial idea an administration can refuse to spend money appropriated by Congress.
Congress still has the right to say, yeah, you can spend this money, but that the president can decide, actually, no, I'm not going to do that. Russ Vought has demonstrated in his actions in office, he's on board with this theory, and then he's further espoused on them in his writing since he left office.
The Lake and Riley Act mandating detention for illegal immigrants arrested on some minor charges has advanced in the Senate with bipartisan support. Meanwhile, the White House is extending protection from deportation for some migrants from four strife-torn nations, Ukraine, Venezuela, Sudan, and El Salvador. I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
San Diego Gas and Electric reports that it restored power to all customers affected by public safety power shutoffs as of Friday night. Despite the restorations, unprecedented and prolonged dry conditions continue. We are under a red flag alert. SDG&E encourages customers to remain prepared with the potential for future shutoffs in coming days. SDG&E began de-energizing thousands of customers earlier in the week in response to elevated wildfire weather conditions and the driest start to the rainy season in San Diego County in the past 174 years. This proactive measure was taken to reduce wildfire risk and protect public safety. Following patrols and inspections of power lines on foot and by air, SDG&E crews restored power for all customers who were impacted by the shutoffs as of Friday night. During the public safety power shutoffs, SDG&E did open community resource centers in the affected areas, providing customers with services such as Wi-Fi, food, and phone and medical device charging. With power now restored, all community resource centers have been closed. For more information and potential for future shutoffs, you can visit sdge.com. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Dozens of public speakers at the Grossmont Healthcare District meeting on January 7th urged the board to move its 9 a.m. meetings to evenings in order to accommodate people with full-time jobs. The proposal was made by newly elected director Nadia Farjood, a working mother who says her new full-time job at the district attorney's office prevents her from attending daytime meetings. The district represents about 520,000 residents. Around 271 people signed a petition in support of Farjood's proposal, and around 40 showed up in support at yesterday's meeting. But despite testimony from union representatives, healthcare workers, district residents, and local elected officials, Farjood's proposal failed with no other director in support. Some speakers voiced concern not only for Farjood, but for a potential chilling effect on would-be candidates who may be persuaded from running for office if they have full-time jobs. Jesse Garcia from the Carpenters Union called it unfair to disenfranchise the 23,000 voters who backed Farjood in the recent election by refusing to accommodate her request, potentially forcing her off the board. He said he serves on multiple boards and committees, which all have evening meetings. Regina Beasley, a Sharp Healthcare Worker and Service Employees International Union member, said restricting meetings to mornings is discriminatory based on age, gender, and employment status. She added, "Most of us here have children." Leela Cater testified that she represents almost 2,000 healthcare workers in the Grossmont District. She told the board that workers will start paying a lot more attention to these meetings and will hold this board accountable. Tony Vargas, a phlebotomist, voiced concerns over exclusion of working people, including healthcare workers, by holding morning meetings. Not having evening meetings is about preserving power, she told the board. Brianna Costin, a trustee on the La Mesa Spring Valley School District Board, stated, "This is a public board, and you serve the public," noting that 75% of voters in this district are below retirement age and thus likely to have work conflicts that would make it difficult to attend daytime meetings. Former La Mesa council member Jack Hsu said he would often take calls late at night from constituents. "Public service means you serve the people when it is needed," he said after dozens of others have spoken out. "I have not heard one person speak in favor of keeping the 9 a.m. time," he said, noting that La Mesa changed its meetings to 6 p.m. and had an increase in attendance. Melinda Vasquez said she worked with Farjood and voted for her because I knew that she would bring a different vantage point to this board. She should not have to quit her day job to do public service. Several callers gave remote testimony on Zoom, including La Mesa Councilwoman Lauren Casares, who praised the excellent service she received from the healthcare district after being hit by a drunk driver in December. But she added, "I have a full-time job and I am a council member. It shouldn't be difficult to participate in meetings." After public testimony, the board held a discussion led by board president Bob Ayers, who thanked everyone for sharing their views. Director Virginia Hall disputed claims by some speakers that all board members are retired and should be more flexible. "I do work," she said, adding, "It saddens me to hear these comments." She praised the district for accomplishments including lowering tax rates for taxpayers, giving out $1.5 million in grants to community organizations, receiving a Golden Watchdog Award, and being named the best healthcare district in California in 2023. Hall noted that people who can't attend in person may participate via Zoom and noted that the board did launch a pilot program holding meetings at 5 p.m. for 6 months last year, but the attendance did not increase. She suggested that attendance at meetings is low because the community trusts board members to make wise decisions. Director Randy Lanack, participating remotely, noted that the head of LAFCO has said the Grossmont Healthcare District is the gold standard of healthcare districts. He voiced support for keeping meetings at 9 a.m. and said the meeting time has been settled for a long time, drawing groans from the crowd. Farjud pointed out that the issue was not whether the district has done good work. She then pressed her colleagues over their responses to a survey sent to board members about their availability for meetings at other times. Though all members had written down a preference to keep meetings at 9 a.m., she noted none of the members identified any conflict with 6 p.m. She said she has seen board members at other evening meetings, including a recent holiday party. Lanack insisted that 9 a.m. is the best time to assure principal participants can attend. He said that when meetings used to be at 7:30 a.m., he sometimes had to drive through snow from his rural home. Farjud asked who Lanack considers principal participants, prompting the attorney to try and stop her questioning. This drew shouts from the audience, such as, "No one elected him." Assured she could continue, Farjus stated, "My view is that the public are the principals." Lanack clarified that he was referring to members of the hospital who regularly addressed the board on matters such as healthcare quality, finances, facilities, and future projects. Farjus noted that the board is the oversight body for the hospital, adding, "To say we would put the interests of the hospital above the public you've heard from today is backwards." As for the 5 p.m. pilot program, Farjud noticed that many people get off work at 5 p.m. and are commuting home at that hour. She objected to what she views as inadequate outreach by the district, noting that most constituents she met walking precincts said they never heard of it. Farjud clarified that she is not asking the board to change its days, which alternate between Tuesdays and Thursdays, but only to shift times to 6 p.m. or later. Hall objected, saying that the people are tired at the end of the day and that traffic can be bad at 6 p.m. Farjud suggested that better outreach could boost meeting attendance. When Hall asked why so many people showed up at this meeting, when meetings are usually sparsely attended, Farjud replied, "Because I let them know about this," drawing cheers from the audience. Board Chair Gloria Chadwick, a retired nurse and longtime advocate for seniors, noted that some seniors are vision challenged, particularly with night driving. Pressed on her own availability for evening sessions, Chadwick said, "I will do whatever our board decides." Director Ayers said it's possible he could attend evening meetings, but noted that he has an outside full-time job that often requires evening work, including talking with clients in other countries. He added, "Last night, I didn't finish until almost 9 p.m. As for Farjud's conflict with attending daytime meetings, Ayers noted that directors are also expected to attend training sessions, committee members, legislative days, grantees' events, and community events, which are often during daytime hours. Farjud asked why the board needs 2 meetings a month. She then made a motion asking the board to change 1 meeting per month on the third Thursday at 6 p.m. No member seconded the motion, which died without a vote. Farjud concluded, "Today is a dark day for the Grossmont Healthcare District. No amount of years serving on this board can erase the message sent today that working people cannot serve on this board." But she added defiantly, "I am not going anywhere," suggesting she may seek accommodation from her employer or, as an attorney, perhaps pursue a legal remedy. "I will be advocating for this at every meeting," she pledged. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
The El Cajon Police Department has released surveillance and body cam videos from the officer involved shooting outside El Cajon Police Headquarters on December 11th during preparations for an officer's retirement ceremony. The video shows a Toyota Tundra SUV driven by 24-year-old Benjamin Grube, a non-binary person who earlier was identified as Andrea Grube. Video shows Grube park outside police headquarters for about 10 minutes, then drive onto a sidewalk and intentionally ram Sergeant Kevin Maxwell as he was trying to run away from the oncoming vehicle. Sergeant Maxwell was thrown into the air before the vehicle struck a bush. The injured sergeant managed to grab his service revolver while still on his knees, ordering Grube to exit the vehicle. A lieutenant nearby called for backup. Officer Evan Drescher arrived on scene, shouting, "Don't move," but Grube instead pulled forward, trying to run over Maxwell a second time, even as both officers had guns trained on her. Both Maxwell and Drescher fired their weapons. Maxwell through the windshield and Drescher through the driver's side window. Maxwell jumped out of the path of the oncoming vehicle. Several shots can be heard on the audio from body cam footage. Here's an excerpt of the audio after Grube accelerated and tried to hit Sergeant Maxwell for the second time. And warning, this may be disturbing to hear.
Hands up!
I got you. Hands. Don't move! Stop moving!
Shots fired. Front of the station.
Officers pulled Grube from the vehicle and rendered medical aid, as did paramedics. Grube was transported to a hospital, where he was pronounced dead. According to El Cajon Police, investigators found Grube soaked in gasoline with 3 gas cans found in the truck. Grube was later found to have suicidal ideations and anti-law enforcement views. Sergeant Maxwell was transported to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries, including a concussion, and he was later released. No other officers or civilians were injured. San Diego Police Department is conducting an investigation, as is customary for officer-involved shootings involving other local police agencies. The District Attorney's Office will review results of that investigation. El Cajon Police Department is also conducting an administrative review into the officers' use of force involving discharge of their service guns. Reporting from El Cajon for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is John Tidwell with a Crime Beat report. 2 men have been arrested as suspects in the murder of 23-year-old Darren Willie Singleton Jr., who was gunned down in Lemon Grove last September. Deputies responding to gunfire shortly before 11 p.m. on September 18th on Dane Street found Singleton suffering gunshot wounds to the torso. Despite life-saving efforts by San Miguel Fire Department personnel and sheriff's deputies, Singleton died at the scene. Lieutenant Michael Crew with the San Diego County Sheriff's Office says months of intensive investigation led to the arrests of two individuals believed to be involved in this heinous crime. 47-year-old Richard Charles Lee was apprehended in San Diego on January 7th. 44-year-old Reality Grayson was arrested in Temecula. Both suspects have been booked into custody at the San Diego Central Jail on charges related to the murder of Singleton. The San Diego Sheriff's Office thanks the San Diego Police Department, the Riverside Sheriff's Department, and the San Diego Regional Fugitive Task Force for their assistance in these arrests. Anyone with information about Singleton's murder is asked to call the Sheriff's Homicide Unit at 858-285-6330. After hours at 858-868-3200. You can remain anonymous by calling Crime Stoppers at 888-580-8477.
This is Miriam Raftery with an update to that story. After John recorded it, the sheriff advised us that a third suspect has been arrested and charged with aiding and abetting in the murder of Darren Willie Singleton Jr. On January 9th, 45-year-old Valena Marie Gonzalez of San Diego was apprehended by the San Diego Regional Task Force in San Diego. She's been booked into custody at Las Colinas Detention Facility.
Mental health groups are stepping up to help victims of the LA fires deal with the extreme stress brought on by the disaster. The California Parent and Youth Helpline is beginning to work at evacuation centers and is looking to partner with community or government entities to provide victims with emotional support. Dr. Lisa Payan Berlin is president and CEO of Parents Anonymous, which runs the free helpline. She says people can call, text, or live chat with a trained counselor.
That emotional support really needs to be handled by an experienced professional who's trained to listen and to help people deal with the immediate angst and depression because they don't know where to turn.
The helpline is open 12 hours a day at 877-427-2736 to guide people through the chaos, desperation, and fear. And the group's website, caparentyouthhelpline.org, will also connect people to ongoing online support groups. Payan Berlin says Parents Anonymous would like to expand if fire relief funding becomes available. However, the service may be in jeopardy because Governor Gavin Newsom left the helpline out of his January budget proposal. Now, with entire neighborhoods wiped out, she says the need for mental health assistance is greater than ever.
Because they no longer have their community. They don't have their school. They don't have the safe place they lived in. They're displaced. And the impact is devastating.
Parents Anonymous is asking lawmakers to continue to support the helpline as they negotiate the final budget this spring. The California Parent and Youth Helpline received a two-year appropriation of $4.7 million in the 2023 budget. If it isn't renewed, that funding will run out this summer. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Pope Francis has named San Diego's Cardinal Robert McElroy as the new Archbishop of Washington, D.C., where he is expected to provide a strong moral voice opposing some policies of the incoming Trump administration. McElroy was appointed by Pope Francis to serve as bishop in San Diego in 2015 and in 2022 was elevated to cardinal. He replaces retiring Cardinal Wilton Gregory as Archbishop in the Washington, D.C. diocese, which includes the nation's capital and is home to more than 667,000 Catholics. Archbishop McElroy, in an online press conference after his appointment, spoke out against Trump's pledge to deport millions of undocumented immigrants. McElroy acknowledged that each nation has a right to control its borders, but said it's important to respect the dignity of every person. He said, indiscriminate massive deportation across the country would be something that would be incompatible with Catholic doctrine. McElroy also spoke of climate change, which the Trump administration refuses to acknowledge as a real threat to humanity. The Archbishop stated, I think one of the greatest challenges for the church in the world at this moment is out of the care of our home on this earth, for the planet, and all of the abuse which it is suffering. McElroy supports Pope Francis's environmental encyclical, Catholic News Agency reports. The new archbishop has also questioned why issues such as poverty, racism, immigration, and climate change were not identified as priorities at the U.S. Bishops' Conference over social issues such as abortion. McElroy has supported providing communion to politicians regardless of their stances on abortion. In addition, he has denounced bullying of LGBTQ plus youths. Support for McElroy's appointment is not universal. Attorneys representing alleged victims of sexual abuse by priests in the San Diego Roman Catholic Diocese have criticized the appointment, NBC7 reports. Although the alleged abuse occurred before McElroy came to San Diego, the local diocese declared bankruptcy with McElroy at the helm, a move that could delay or deny compensation to over 500 alleged victims, according to Margaret Stewart, an attorney representing the victims. These victims have suffered pain for a lifetime because of their horrendous sexual abuse by San Diego priests, Stewart says. Originally from San Francisco, Archbishop McElroy received a bachelor's degree at Harvard University, as well as a master's degree in history and a doctoral degree in political science from Stanford, as well as a doctorate in moral theology from the Pontifical Gregorian University in Rome. He taught ethics at St. Patrick's Seminary and authored a doctoral dissertation titled Morality and American Foreign Policy, The Role of Moral Norms in International Affairs. McElroy has been outspoken in his criticism of Trump in the past. After then-President Trump visited San Diego to tout the new border wall, McElroy stated, "It is a sad day for our country when we trade the majestic, hope-filled symbolism of the Statue of Liberty for an ineffective and grotesque wall, which both displays and inflames the ethnic and cultural divisions that have long been the underside of our national history." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Sam Rybakov.
This is Miriam Raftery with a public service announcement from the County of San Diego. The county's Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board is taking applications to fill an opening. The review board was established in 1990 to investigate citizen complaints against county sheriff's deputies and probation officers. The vacancy is for the at-large seat, which is open to any eligible resident in the county. The 11 members include two from each of the 5 supervisorial districts, as well as one seat chosen at large from any of the districts. The county supervisors appoints members for staggered 3-year terms beginning July 1st and ending June 30th. The board also investigates deaths and connections with the actions of sworn deputies and probation officers. The review board makes advisory findings on complaints and recommends policy and procedural changes to the sheriff, chief probation officer, and the board of supervisors. To apply, you must be a registered voter in San Diego County, and you can't be a county employee or affiliated with the county. You cannot currently hold a position as a sworn law enforcement officer. All applicants must attend a regular Citizens Law Enforcement Review Board meeting or watch a past meeting before applying. You must complete a training course within 3 months of the appointment and agree to serve a 3-year term for no more than 2 consecutive full terms. Applications are available from the clerk at the County Board of Supervisors. The first review of applications will start January 30th.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. or call 619-698-7617.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
Leaders of the University of California and Cal State Systems are warning that a proposed budget cut of almost 8% for next year could lead to larger class sizes, fewer course offerings, and staff reductions unless it is reversed. Governor Gavin Newsom's January budget proposal would technically defer the monies for 2 years. Josh Hagan is Vice President of Policy and Advocacy with the Campaign for College Opportunity in Sacramento.
In last year's budget, the governor and legislature said, you need to be prepared for an 8% system-wide cut. This budget affirmed that that system-wide cut is coming. So the silver lining is that it's a one-time cut. It is not ongoing, but that's still going to be felt.
The governor proposes to invest more than $45 billion in higher education as a whole, which is slightly less than last year. Community colleges will get a cost of living increase of just over $230 million as a result of Proposition 98. The legislature has until June to pass a balanced budget. Hagan is convinced the California economy is slowly moving in the right direction.
We're turning the corner. We're not fully around it yet. And so it's about making sure colleges and universities are able to maintain program services for students as we're looking towards a multi-year economic recovery.
Hagan notes the budget proposal does include $5 million to create a coordinating council so the UC, CSU, and community college systems can better react to events like a natural disaster or financial downturn in the future. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
This is East County Magazine's sports report. Under sun-drenched skies, some of the best racewalkers in the world shattered several records as they traversed the Santee Trolley Square course on January 12th. The USA Track and Field National event featured competition in 35 kilometers, 20K, 10K, 5K, and 3K for both men and women. The overall 35K winner, Perseus Kallström of Torshälla, Sweden, crossed the finish line in just over 2 hours and 27 minutes, nearly 17 minutes faster than the previous course record. Kallström, who is 34 years old, is the winner of multiple medals in both the World Track and Field Championships and other major races. A three-time Olympic athlete, he's gearing up for the 2026 Los Angeles Olympic Games. He won $8,000 for his first-place finish. He was followed by Mexico's Ever Jair Palma Olivares and Nick Christie from El Cajon, who finished at 2 hours, 45 minutes, and 31 seconds. Christie holds the U.S. record for the event and took $4,000 for his third-place finish. The women's 35K winner was Valeria Ortuna Martinez, a 26-year-old woman from Mexico City who finished in 2 hours, 51 minutes, and 33 seconds, breaking the course record by nearly 6 minutes. She was followed by Nadia Gonzalez of Toluca, Mexico, and Olivia Lundman of Vancouver, Canada. The USA Championship women's winner was Katie Burnett, a 36-year-old from Bellevue, Washington. Santee City Manager Marlene Best says the city was honored to host both the U.S. Championships and International Racewalk Invitationals in 15 of the past 17 years. She says, we love being the racewalk capital of the United States. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
The city of La Mesa welcomed two new council members during its city council meeting in December. The occasion marked a historic milestone in La Mesa, as the council now has four women, including African-American, Asian, and Latina representatives, as well as the city's first LGBTQ+ representative. This is a proud and historic moment for La Mesa, said Mayor Mark Arapostathis. Our city council reflects the strength and diversity of our community. He adds, I look forward to working alongside my colleagues to continue making La Mesa a place where everyone feels represented and empowered. Joining the council are two newly elected members, Lauren Casares and Genevieve Suzuki. Both Casares and Suzuki have deep roots in the La Mesa community. Casares, a native La Mesan, serves as policy advisor at the San Diego Regional Chamber of Commerce and has been in various boards and committees, including the City of La Mesa Community Police Oversight Board. Councilmember Casares says, as a proud Latina, the youngest councilwoman in La Mesa history, and first openly LGBTQ+ councilmember, I'm committed to ensuring that our city remains a place where everyone feels heard, valued, and empowered to thrive. Councilmember Suzuki, a family law attorney with more than a decade of legal experience, has served on the Community Services Commission and the La Mesa Park and Recreation Foundation Board. I'm honored to have been elected to represent our vibrant community, Suzuki says, adding, I look forward to making sure everyone feels heard and using my time on the City Council to continue the progress made by our outgoing council members, Colin Parent and Jack Hsu. Hsu retired after decades of public service. Parent ran unsuccessfully for State Assembly. The election of the new council members, Casares and Suzuki, reflects the city's diverse makeup, with women representing approximately 52% of the population. This milestone brings on the foundation set in 1980 when Jerry Lopez was elected La Mesa's first female city council member. Vice Mayor Patricia Dillard, who is African American, said after the swearing-in of the new members, I'm thrilled to have made history at Tuesday's final city council meeting of the year. Of the new supermajority female council, Dillard says, together we will continue to represent our community with dedication and excellence. Four highly qualified women, each with diverse multicultural backgrounds, are poised to lead. Congratulations to us all. Councilmember Laura Lothian, whose heritage is half Guatemalan, recalls attending her first La Mesa City Council meeting decades ago, when it consisted of four men and one woman. Since then, our city council has always been majority male, she says, adding, this new council with four women and one man will be very different and interesting. We are a diverse council with a Greek mayor and four council members who are female, Black, Asian, and Hispanic. She notes that the council is also diverse in age. Both Lothian and Dillard are grandmothers. Suzuki is a young mother, and Casares is the youngest council member elected since the 1970s. The city encourages residents to engage with the new council members and participate in upcoming city council meetings, which are held on the second and fourth Tuesday of each month at 6 p.m. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Tidwell.
This is Miriam Raftery with a health alert. A deer mouse collected on January 3rd in Cuyamaca Rancho State Park here in East County has tested positive for the potentially deadly hantavirus. Finding hantavirus in wild rodents is not unusual in San Diego County. There were 25 cases last year. While exposure to hantavirus is rare, people should be careful around wild rodents, since there is no cure or vaccine for hantavirus. Symptoms of hantavirus usually develop 1 to 8 weeks after exposure and include severe muscle aches, chills, fever or fatigue, headache, dizziness, nausea, vomiting, stomach pain, and difficulty breathing. If you think you may have been exposed to hantavirus, seek medical attention right away. People can be exposed to hantavirus when wild rodents invade their living area. Infected rodents shed the virus in their urine, feces, and saliva. Once dried, the virus can be stirred into the air and infect anybody who inhales it. To avoid exposure, seal up all external holes in homes, garages, and sheds larger than a dime to keep rodents from getting in. Eliminate rodent infestations immediately. Avoid rodent-infested areas and do not stir up dust or materials that may be contaminated. If you find wild rodents, nests, or signs of them in your living spaces, always use wet cleaning methods. Do not sweep or vacuum, which could stir hantavirus into the air where it can be inhaled. Ventilate the affected area by opening doors and windows at least 30 minutes before you start to clean. Wear rubber gloves, then spray a 10% bleach solution or other disinfectant onto dead rodents, rodent droppings, nests, contaminated traps, and the surrounding areas. Let the disinfectant stand at least 15 minutes, then clean up with a sponge or a mop that's soaked in disinfectant. Place disinfected debris and dead rodents into two plastic bags, seal them, and discard in the trash. Wash gloves in a bleach solution, then soap and water, and dispose of them in double bags, and thoroughly wash your hands with soap and water when done.
Two new laws designed to protect California consumers take effect this year, cracking down on hard-to-cancel subscriptions and certain types of bank fees. Assembly Bill 2863, which takes effect July 1st, will require subscription services to be as easy to cancel as they are to sign on to. Robert Harrell with the Consumer Federation of California says right now, canceling a recurring subscription can be a time-consuming nightmare.
And that's not bug in the system, that's a feature of those systems. Many companies know that if they make it really hard for you to cancel, people will just either give up or forget about it or whatever.
The new click or call to cancel law also requires companies to remind customers once a year that the subscription is active. The Federal Trade Commission just passed a similar national rule, which is already being challenged in court. It's unclear whether the new Republican majority will challenge the regulation under the Congressional Review Act. The second law, which took effect January 1st, bans state-chartered banks and credit unions from charging fees for non-sufficient funds in cases where the card was rejected and the sale never went through. Harrell notes that state data show these so-called NSF fees, which can be up to $40 each, are very lucrative for financial institutions.
A scary number of state-chartered credit unions are absolutely addicted to this revenue stream. And what that means is that they are profiting directly off the backs of poor working class people, because that's what the data overwhelmingly shows about who's paying NSF.
More good news. Starting in February, more financial institutions must register with the state and submit data for monitoring. These include companies that provide debt settlement, student debt relief, financing of private post-secondary education, and income-based cash advances. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news from San Diego's East County.
In December, a judge ordered a transient release to a temporary location in San Diego County for Alvin Quarles, a sexually violent predator, or SVP. Now, Supervisor Joel Anderson has written a letter to Superior Court Judge Marion Gaston urging her to block the release. Anderson has also launched a petition and is seeking signatures from constituents opposed to Quarles' release. Quarles has been dubbed the bolder-than-most rapist for a series of sexual assaults in the 1980s committed at knife point, sometimes with the victim's husband or boyfriend forced to watch. An audit last year found that 4% of SVPs in the state's conditional release program reoffended, while 19% of SVPs not in the program reoffended. Anderson says in light of the numerous heinous offenses committed by SVPs, transient releases that would prevent an effective oversight process to track and monitor them should be rejected by the courts. Anderson has also objected to the high number of SVPs released into East County compared to urban and coastal areas in San Diego County. Several prior attempts to place Quarles into housing supervised by Liberty Healthcare failed, leading to this transient release plan. Quarles served time in state prison and later a state hospital before being deemed suitable for release under the state's conditional release program. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is the East County Magazine Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities.
This is Sam Rybakov with East County Magazine's Tribal Beat Report. President Joe Biden has signed into law the bipartisan Hamul Indian Village Land Transfer Act, which passes 172 acres of land in San Diego's East County into tribal trust for the Hamul Indian Village. The measure was carried in the Senate by California Senator Alex Padilla, with a companion measure in the House authored by Congressman Daryl Issa. Senator Padilla says, after years of sacrifice in their efforts to achieve self-determination, the Hamul Indian Village will finally get the true homeland they deserve to preserve their sacred history, said Senator Padilla. Congressman Issa said the Hamul Indian Village has sought for years to bring tribal members back onto their ancestral land so they can raise their families, carry forward their culture, and add to their history, adding, "This free to trust bill provides that opportunity, securing land, preserving its sacred sites, and protecting Kumaye traditions for generations to come. The 172 acres are currently owned by the Hamul Indian Village, including residential land for homes and council buildings, an ancestral cemetery, and the tribe's only road for transportation." Hamul Indian Village Chairwoman Erica Pinto testified on the legislation, stating, "The tribe desperately needs additional trust land so that it may preserve and protect its cultural sites and develop housing for its members, a health clinic, a grocery store, tribal administration offices, law enforcement, educational services, and other community resources in services of the tribe's members." After the bill became law, Chairwoman Pinto told East County Magazine, "No words can describe what this legislation truly means to my people." The measures drew some local opposition. The Dildzura Community Planning Group raised concerns over potential commercial development and traffic, but Chairwoman Pinto has pledged the tribe will only use the land for purposes specified, including tribal housing, education, administrative offices, and healthcare.
Hundreds of Syrians from across San Diego County gathered in El Cajon's Kennedy Park on December 21st to celebrate the liberation of their homeland. With the fall of the brutal Bashar Assad regime, Syrian refugees forced to flee for their lives now have hopes of someday returning home. In El Cajon, Syrian men, women, and children celebrated by dancing, sharing food, waving Syrian and American flags, and telling their stories. With the removal of Assad and the fall of his regime, Syrians are now seeing people they know, including family members, being released from the infamous Sadneya prison, a cause for joy after years of despair. Rima Al-Khatib, a volunteer with the Mandel Arab Community Center of San Diego County, told East County Magazine that all Syrians in El Cajon came from Turkey, Egypt, Lebanon, or Jordan. With the removal of Assad, many countries are now saying they may return Syrian refugees back to Syria. Many Syrian refugees here say they want to go back to Syria, but not now. First, they want to see what happens with the new leadership, which holds promise for a new, stable Syria. Others hope to make America their permanent home. Many of the Syrians at the event expressed concern for an uncertain future, asking, quote, "What will it be like?" unquote. Ali Abdi came as a refugee to El Cajon in 2016 with his wife and four children, aged 4 through 16, after fleeing Syria for Turkey, where he spent 2 years. He and two of his children arrived needing medical care for injuries experienced from bombings from Assad forces. One of his children is now in a wheelchair. A daughter is blind and had lost a kidney from having to drink dirty water while they were fleeing Assad's forces and living as refugees. Abdi said he had to flee Syria because of the war, which claimed 40 members of his family, including 10 cousins on his father's side and 4 from his mother's. His sister's sons, 16 and 17 years old, were imprisoned in Syria, and nobody knows their whereabouts or even if they're still alive. With the news of the regime change in Syria, Abdi says he wants to return to Syria to visit family, but he wants to remain living in the United States, where he says the people are, quote, "very welcoming and kind," unquote. Abdi says Assad is a terrible, bad man who has no humanity and no morals. Abdi hopes the new leadership in Syria, led by Ahmed al-Ashara, can rebuild the country. He hopes the U.S. will help to rebuild Syria, both financially and morally. He wants all people to be like, quote, "one hand," unquote, one community, and no differences between people. But if al-Ashara begins to act in an unjust way, Abdi says he should be removed, just like Assad was. Abdi voiced thanks to the United States, adding, quote, "without the U.S., Assad would not have been removed," unquote. Samira Al-Khatib was born in Damascus, Syria, and arrived in El Cajon in 2016 after fleeing Syria and having to spend 4.5 years in Jordan. She arrived with her son, his wife, and 3 children. Al-Khatib says that they had to flee Syria because Assad killed her brother, sister, and nephew. Her entire hometown was destroyed and many of her friends have died in prison. Al-Khatib said that she would like to return to Syria someday, but adds, quote, "there is still uncertainty there, maybe in 2 years. They talk about freedoms, but we don't know how it will go and if they'll do what they say," unquote. She reflects. She wants to see the new Syrian government be accepting of all faiths, adding, quote, "I hope that they use America as an example. You can practice your religions here and everyone follows the law. We want a Syria for all the people. We don't want racism, unquote. Hiba, who shared only her first name, was born in Syria before violence forced her to flee. Quote, I hope there is no more bombing in Syria, unquote, she says. Quote, I want Syria to stay free because everyone deserves freedom. I want to go back to Syria, unquote. Hiba adds, quote, because I still have aunts and uncles there, unquote. Her brother and two sisters also want to go home to Syria, she says, as do many of her friends. Susan Abdulmanli arrived in El Cajon 3 years ago after fleeing Syria for Egypt, where she spent 11 years waiting for her refugee status to process. She fled Syria with her husband and three children when the youngest was only 3 months old. Abdulmanli told East County Magazine, quote, We lost a whole lot of family and all of our homes in Syria. I am scared for the children of Syria, unquote. Her brother's son was only 16 when he disappeared 9 years ago. He has not been heard of since, and they are worried that he was martyred since he wasn't found in the Saadnaya prison. When she heard that Syria was liberated and Assad had fled the country, Abdulmanli says, quote, It was the best news of my life. I was soaring with joy, like I was reborn, unquote. She says she and her family are happy in the U.S., but may return to Syria someday, where she has a sister and two brothers. She hopes that her country will emerge better than before and that, quote, becomes the best country it could be, unquote. Sadly, she reflects, quote, All of Syria is wounded by Assad and his regime. Not one family has not been adversely affected by Assad. I hope that Assad is held accountable for what he did in Syria and to all Syrians, unquote. Assad has reportedly fled to Russia, but Abdulmanli wants to see Assad extradited to Syria and prosecuted under Syrian law. Bashar al-Assad has been president of Syria since 2000, following the death of his father. His rule has been marked by an authoritarian regime with significant human rights abuses. In 2011, peaceful protests against his government escalated into a brutal civil war after Assad's forces violently cracked down on demonstrators. Assad reportedly used chemical weapons on his own people and has been accused of war crimes. The war caused an estimated 500,000 deaths, millions of displaced persons, and widespread devastation. Assad's government managed to regain control of most of the country by 2020, largely due to military support from Russia and Iran, but large parts of northern Syria remain under the control of Kurdish forces, opposition groups, or Turkish influence. The U.S. and other Western nations meanwhile backed opposition forces. By 2023, Assad's regime had reasserted its dominance over much of the country. But on November 27, 2024, a coalition of opposition fighters launched a major offensive against pro-government forces. 3 days later, the opposition fighters took Syria's largest city, Aleppo. The world was surprised and stunned when, on December 8, Syria was liberated and Assad went into exile in Russia. The successful offensive was fought by several armed Syrian opposition groups led by a group called Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, which means Organization for the Liberation of the Levant, a former al-Qaeda affiliate that split off around the time Syrian civil war began in 2011 after Assad's troops violently suppressed widespread anti-government protests. Hayat Tahrir al-Sham is led by Ahmed al-Shara, formerly known as Abdul Muhammad al-Jilani. The U.S. had placed a $10 million bounty on the Syrian leader, but is set to lift the bounty. The decision follows meetings with U.S. diplomats in Damascus, in which Shara committed to ensuring terrorist groups in Syria do not pose a threat to the U.S. Al-Shara's fledgling new government is making hopeful that Syria will be a member of the global community of nations. Women will play a key role in the new Syria, says the new head of women's affairs, Aisha al-Dibs, who says, quote, Women from all provinces and ethnicities will help rebuild the war-torn country, unquote. Unlike some Middle Eastern nations where women's rights are suppressed, Al-Dib says that the government is committed to engaging Syrian women in social, cultural, and political institutions and recruiting qualified women in healthcare and education sectors. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Tim Taylor.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. That's www.knsj.org.
Welcome to East County Magazine's Destination East County, bringing you all of the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County each week.
This is Miriam Raftery with this week's Destination East County, bringing you top festivals and events coming up across our inland region. The Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa will present an updated twist on the classic Wait Until Dark thriller running the next several weekends through February 2nd. The plot focuses on a blind woman trapped in an apartment with three men, then realizing that her blindness holds the key to escaping if she waits until dark. For tickets, visit lamplighterslamesa.com. The Wildlife Research Institute in Ramona invites you to Hawk Watch each Saturday in January and February, starting at 10 a.m. at Beegent Ranch in Ramona. The program includes a biologist talk, plus a Q&A session with falconry or ambassador raptors, and a demonstration of a raptor in flight. Later, you can opt to drive a two-mile route on paved roads to observe wild raptors, including a bald eagle nest. Biologists and volunteers will help you spot and identify birds and view them through their high-powered professional telescopes, although you're also encouraged to bring binoculars. For more information, visit wildlife-research.org. The Borrego Film Festival in Borrego Springs takes place January 15th through 19th, showcasing independent films. This event also features a filmmaker networking event, catered opening gala, panel discussions, filmmaker activities, Saturday party, red carpet event, and catered awards ceremony. For tickets and details, you can visit BorregoSpringsFilmFestival.org. The California Wolf Center in Julian will host one-hour guided tours on January 19th between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. Visitors will see resident wolves and learn about efforts to conserve critically endangered wolves. You can reserve tour space online at californiawolfcenter.org. That's all for this week. We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
Our East County Magazine radio show needs volunteers, and so does our award-winning news website at eastcountymagazine.org. If you would like to help write scripts, learn reporting skills, research topics for our news team, or have an on-air voice to be the media, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617.
This concludes today's edition of the East County Magazine radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Royalty Free Music, and Pond 5. If you would like to underwrite or sponsor the East County Magazine radio show, or get involved as a volunteer on our public interest news show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. We'll be back soon with another edition of the East County Magazine radio show.
You're listening to the East County Magazine radio show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for San Diego's inland region. Now, stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.